This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Probably the thing that Donald Trump cares about the most, or second only to the wall, is China. With China, Trump has been telling the same story for decades. They bully the U.S. on trade, and American politicians never have the guts to stand up to them.
People, and they're laughing at us. They think we're so stupid, and our representatives are so stupid that they can't even believe what they're getting away with. They take our money.
And that's from all the way back in 2010. Now, within the last year, the president has imposed tariffs on consumer products and manufacturing goods, and he keeps threatening more. And they do seem to be having some effect on China's economy. But whether this strategy works out, whatever the outcome of this trade war, our business correspondent Sheila Kolhatkar thinks that it all might be missing the point entirely. Here's Sheila.
One of the things I noticed when Donald Trump would go out and campaign and rant and rave about China was that there was actually perhaps some truth inside the point he was making about that. There is a lot of imbalance in our economic relationship with China. There is a significant trade surplus with China. There's been a tremendous amount of offshoring of jobs from the U.S. to cheaper countries such as China. Trump is being very reactive. He's looking at things that have happened in the past and responding to them. What he's not really doing is thinking about the future and the way things are evolving and where the economy is going. And there is a very powerful rising technology sector in China, and I don't think Trump has given it 2 seconds of thought. They want to rival Silicon Valley. And they have managed to create a really vibrant, thriving technology sector. Having done reporting in China, I've learned firsthand that it can be really difficult to understand what's going on there economically as an outsider. You need a guide. You need someone who's in there and can really translate and explain it to you. And someone who's in a really good position to do that is Dr. Kai-Fu Lee. He's a trained computer scientist. He's worked for a handful of major American technology companies, including Google, Apple, and Microsoft. And now he runs a venture capital firm in Beijing, so he's investing in the next generation of Chinese tech firms.
I have 10 apps on my phone I can show you. You'll be wowed by all of them, and they don't exist in the U.S.
Can you tell us about what those apps are? I know WeChat is obviously one of them, but yeah, what are they?
Sure. I'll give you maybe three examples. So one is a consumer loan app. If you want to borrow money, open the app, and then the money zapped right to your phone. AI makes the decision.
Wow.
Without any human intervention. And the default rates are dramatically lower than human loan officers. Another example is this company called VIP Kid, where a kid can get tutored today by, say, an American English teacher in a very high-quality curriculum. And, of course, the biggest one is the WeChat. And WeChat is the giant app which probably consumes half of people's time. You can connect your friends. You can conduct business in it. You can use it to buy movie tickets and call a shared ride. You can pay with it. And that payment in WeChat has essentially eliminated credit cards, which used to be the world's best way of paying, but now has become a dinosaur in China.
There was this perception for a long time that Chinese tech companies were struggling to keep up with their American counterparts. But Dr. Lee's point is that the Chinese tech sector has actually leaped ahead of the U.S. technology sector in a lot of important ways. One of the areas where they've actually jumped ahead is in implementing artificial intelligence technology. Dr. Li has written a book about AI and the economic relationship between the U.S. and China called AI Superpowers.
Actually, the top Chinese media company is a company called ByteDance, and they're a media organization with no human editors.
Oh, goodness.
It is a personal line. Think of this as a Facebook newsfeed on steroids. Now, I realize there are issues, concerns, but the average user time per day on that platform is 72 minutes, much higher than even Facebook in the U.S.
In your book, you mentioned that a lot of the most important work that's been done up until now in AI has occurred in the U.S., but that in the future, the most important work is likely to occur in China. Why do you think that is?
Well, the U.S. has invented the technologies, but this is not the age of Enrico Fermi, that a few scientists possess all the secrets from the rest of the world. So we've moved from the era of discovery or invention to the era of implementation. And who will better implement depends really on two things. How many entrepreneurs and engineers do you have, and how much data do you have?
In both cases, China is pulling way ahead of the U.S. There are some high-level figures in the tech world in the U.S. who have expressed concern with how determined and ambitious a lot of Chinese tech workers seem to be. Dr. Li points out there's also a real cultural difference between a lot of tech workers in China and those in the U.S.
Certainly, China is in a very unique circumstance that many of the entrepreneurs, or actually many of the people, have had families that have been poor for 10 or 20 generations, and they carry the burden of, as a single child, having to support two parents and four grandparents in their future. So it is understandable why the work ethic is really incredible. While I think China has some work ethic advantages, so to speak, it is not the primary thing. China has created an alternate universe that has completely different ways of starting entrepreneurial systems.
Dr. Li's point is that because intellectual property is not well protected in China, it is a very fiercely competitive business environment. While here we may be spending money on defending copyrights and there are trade theft lawsuits, over there, entrepreneurs and tech workers are just furiously working to stay ahead of their competitors. The even bigger advantage for Chinese tech companies is they have access to incredible amounts of user data from all of their users within China. We talked about the Chinese app WeChat earlier. Imagine if Facebook, Amazon, Seamless, Venmo, and Uber were all in the same app. That's kind of like WeChat. It's a giant repository of data about its users' friends, what its users buy, what they eat, where they go, how much money they spend, all collected in one place.
And that massive data can be turned into smart AI algorithms that provide a better user experience and helps the companies who make those software make even more money.
One thing that makes China very different, of course, is the role that the government plays in business. The Chinese government is involved in the tech sector there in all sorts of ways that we would never see in the United States. They provide financing to companies. They can help companies build factories in areas where people might be living by just demanding that they move. I mean, they can really almost wave their hands and clear the path for these companies to expand or develop or come into being in the first place.
The approach the Chinese government takes is what I call techno-utilitarian. When a new technology like mobile payment comes out, U.S. will tend to debate it and have regulation, and then the products come out. In China, generally, they're allowed to go out while the government watches to see if there are issues. The government will tend to let new technologies grow faster and not worry as much about protecting the incumbent, the credit cards, the banks.
Dr. Li downplays the Chinese government's involvement, which might have something to do with the fact that the private sector in China, where he works and makes his living, and the Chinese government are closely intertwined.
I would personally believe and argue that the innovative business model thinking is the primary contribution in China, working hard is secondary, and then government is actually lower.
It certainly appears that our relationship with China is becoming much more adversarial. There's constant talk of a trade war. Trump's imposed tariffs on Chinese goods. There are constant threats to crack down on Chinese IP violations and cybercrime. Dr. Li doesn't think any of that is going to slow down the explosive growth of China's tech sector. The thing is, let's say China ends up winning the technology race and they end up dominating in AI. One thing we know is AI is eventually going to put a lot of people out of work. Not just factory workers, but all kinds of workers, truck drivers, accountants, people who work in banks, even journalists. Ultimately, both China and the U.S. are going to be facing some real social upheaval as a result of all these changes. And Dr. Li is worried about that.
Well, it's a moral issue that keeps me up at night. It's not a business imperative. I worry that the technologies that we fund, they catch everyone by surprise. People aren't given enough time to prepare for this shift in workforce. I think governments, if they react too late, they'll be forced to deal with it by just brute force means, like universal basic income. And if they only do that, then the massive number of people will not be starving, but they're going to feel a loss of meaning. Some people question if we could roll back, but that's just not possible. The technology is out there, so I think it's incumbent upon us to figure out how to reap the benefits and use those benefits to solve the problems. And we need to be more global and willing to share the findings as opposed to keep them as the so-called competitive edge. The progress of humanity is a lot more important than any small competition one country has over another.
The venture capitalist Kai-Fu Lee, the author of AI Superpowers, China, Silicon Valley, and the New World Order. He spoke with staff writer Sheila Kolhatkar.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.